WHFR, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Mom, Dad, I'm in eighth grade now. That means those years of peer pressure are way behind me. From here on out, it's all about good grades and living up to your totally realistic expectations. Alcohol is probably the last thing on my mind. Like you said, I'm too young to drink. When I'm with my friends, all we talk about are current events and boy bands. We're definitely not curious about what alcohol tastes like or why the older kids drink. And do I notice when you have a drink at dinner? Of course not. Just like I haven't noticed where you keep the alcohol. Oh, and if the opportunity arises to talk to me about drinking, you should definitely continue to avoid it. And if you do bring it up, just remind me that I'm too young. That'll probably do the trick.
Real kids are curious about alcohol. 40% try it by the eighth grade. Start a real conversation at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. Talk early, talk often, get others involved. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Criminal justice studies are concerned with the preservation of peace, the prevention of crime, and the protection of life and property. A knowledge of the role of criminal justice in our society also serves to emphasize the importance of balancing the needs of society to maintain social order against the need to safeguard individual rights. For more information on the HFCC Associate Degree Program in Criminal Justice, contact the Criminal Justice Department at one of the following numbers: 313-845-6437, 313-845-9714, or 313-845-9859.
Hello, my name is Phil Mack, and I'm here to tell you about a new and different kind of show coming to WHFR called Thematic. It's on every Thursday morning from 10 until noon. Since music is a universal language, let's see if that holds true by looking at different musical styles on selected themes. Each week, there will be songs from different genres that express their viewpoint on that theme. There will also be a weekly artist showcase, and of course, plenty of variety. It's a new way of looking at music. So on every Thursday morning from 10 until noon, it's Thematic. Thematic, thematic. Organizing music for you, one song at a time. On WHFR, the only station making waves.
This is David Twitchell, host of WHFR's We Are Not Alone, wishing all our loyal listeners a very happy holiday season and a prosperous 2012.
Disclaimer. This show is a WHFR talk show presentation. The opinions expressed by WHFR staff and our guests are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, administrators, anyone on our Board of Trustees, or students.
WHFR Dearborn.
Yalla ba shebe wanyani wu. Abala la bala la bala ya jo mangala seni wu shanaku sanayu
Abarigani. Greetings, everyone. I am Madafo. Peace and blessings. Welcome and thank you for tuning in to a season's griot from PRI, Public Radio International. This year we are telling stories about peace. Kwanzaa is an African-American cultural celebration that pays homage to the legacy of African people in America and gives credence to their presence throughout the diaspora. Kwanzaa was conceived and developed by Dr. Maulana Ron Karinga and first celebrated in 1966, from December 26 until January 1st, African Americans gather in their homes, churches, community buildings, wherever African Americans gather, with each day focused on the Nguzo Saba, or the seven principles of Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa seeks to enforce a connectedness to African cultural identity, provide a focal point for the gathering of African peoples, and reflect upon the Nguzo Saba, the central focus of the Kwanzaa celebration. Kwanzaa has definite practices, principles, and symbols which are geared to the spiritual and social needs of African Americans. The reinforcing gestures are designed to strengthen our collective self-concept as a people, honor our past, critically evaluate our present, and commit ourselves to a fuller, more productive future. Kwanzaa is a way of life. As a living social practice, it is a week of remembering, reassessing, recommitting, rewarding, and rejoicing. For evaluation of ourselves and our history, we relate to the past, reassess our thoughts and practices, and recommit ourselves to the achievement of Black liberation and the betterment of life for all Black Americans. Finally, the concept of Kwanzaa is to help Black Americans embrace their past in order to understand the present and deal with the future. The Nguzo Saba are the set of principles by which African Americans order their relations and live their lives. As a product of tradition, the Nguzo Saba are social and spiritual principles which offer guidance as we relate with each other and rebuild our lives in our own images.
Umoja, unity. African people are inextricably connected. Though some were dropped off in Boston, while others were sold to the plantation owners in Virginia, North and South Carolina, and still others of us became maroons in the mountains and hills of Jamaica and Haiti, the spirit of Mother Africa sings sweetly to the soul of her children wherever African people reside. Umoja is the first of seven and the most compelling of the Nguzo Saba. For without the concept of unity, all of the other principles are unlikely. Self-determination. There are those who, because of years of indoctrination, miseducation, and misinformation, are conditioned to think and believe all Africans, past and present, were slaves. In fact, when we speak of our African selves, our African ancestry, oftentimes we refer to them in terms of an era when African people were kidnapped, stuffed into the bottom of ships, and with the aid of the Middle Passage, distributed throughout the world and placed in a condition of slavery. Well, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X, once said, "If you have a knowledge of self and understand the glorious history of which you are a part of, then you also know that even though we were placed in a condition of slavery, we are still and foremost an African people." Ujima. Collective work and responsibility. the survival of African people through a dark and tumultuous time is successful because our ancestors understood Harambe, the need to pull together as family, in a community, and as a nation. Therefore, as a collective, we become united in our determination to be responsible within an African-centered worldview. Ujamaa, Ujamaa, Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, working together for the benefit of the group and pooling resources, makes sense. It's common sense. Nia, purpose. Every child must be taught the history and traditions of their people so that they thoroughly understand their responsibilities to the coming generations. Therefore, education must play a role second to none while nurturing the whole child, and everyone must play their part. Kuumba, creativity, always improving, moving forward, making what we have better, doing everything we can in every way we can to give our children all they need to understand their responsibility to themselves, their families, communities, and nation. Money, yeah, yeah. Oh, faith. We are the conscience of all of the generations who came before us, and the spirit of the ones to come. The awesome responsibility that is ours is a natural one ordained by the Creator. Therefore, we must trust in ourselves, our leaders, as well as the lessons we teach our children.
Seven Spools of Thread, a Kwanzaa story by Angela Shelf Madiris. In a small African village in the country of Ghana, there lived an old man and his seven sons. After the death of his wife, the old man became both father and mother to the boys. The seven brothers were handsome young men. Their skin was as smooth and dark as the finest mahogany wood, and their limbs were as straight and strong as warriors' spears. But they were a disappointment to their father. From morning until night, the family's small home was filled with the sounds of the brothers quarreling. As soon as the sun brought forth a new day, the brothers began to argue. They argued all morning about how to tend the crops. They argued all afternoon about the weather. "It is hot," said the middle son. "No, a cool breeze is blowing," said the second son. They argued all evening about when to return home. "It will be dark soon," the youngest said. "Let's finish this row and begin anew tomorrow." "No, it's too early to stop," called a third son. "Can't you see that sun is setting?" shouted the sixth son. And so it would continue until the moon beamed down and the stars twinkled in the sky. At mealtime, the young men argued until the stew was cold and the fufu was hard. "You gave him more than you gave me," whined the third son. "I divided the food equally," said their father. "I'll starve with only this small portion on my plate," complained the youngest. If you don't want it, I'll eat it, said the oldest son. He grabbed a handful of meat from his brother's plate. Stop being so greedy, said the youngest. And so it went on every night. It was often morning before the seven brothers finished dinner. One sad day, the old man died and was buried. At sunrise the next morning, the village chief called the brothers before him. Your father has left an inheritance, said the chief. The brothers whispered excitedly among themselves. I know my father left me everything, said the oldest, because I am the oldest. I know my father left me everything because I'm the youngest son, said the youngest. He left everything to me, said the middle son. I know I was his favorite. Said the second son, everything is mine. The brothers began shouting and shoving. Soon they were rolling around on the ground, hitting and kicking each other. Stop that this instant, said the chief. The brothers stopped fighting. They shook the dust off their clothes and sat before the chief, eyeing each other suspiciously. Your father has decreed that all of his property and possessions will be divided among you equally, said the chief. But first, by the time the moon rises tonight, you must learn how to make gold from these spools of silk thread. If you do not, you will be turned out of your home as beggars. The oldest son received blue thread, the next brother red, the next yellow, the next orange, the next black, then green, and the youngest brother received white thread. For once, the brothers were speechless. The chief spoke again. From this moment forward, you must not argue among yourselves or raise your hand in anger against one another. If you do, all your father's possessions and property will be divided equally among the poorest of the villagers. Go quickly. You only have a little time. The brothers bowed to the chief and hurried away. When the seven Ashanti brothers arrived at their farm, something unusual happened. They sat side by side from the oldest to the youngest without saying anything unkind to each other. My brothers, the oldest said after a while, let us shake hands and make peace among ourselves. Let us never argue or fight again, said the youngest brother. The brothers placed their hands together and held each other tightly. For the first time in years, peace rested within the walls of their home. My brothers, said the third son quietly, surely our father would not turn us out into the world as beggars. I agree, said the middle son. I do not believe our father would have given us the task of turning thread into gold if it were impossible. Could it be, said the oldest son, that there might be small pieces of gold in this thread? The sun beamed hotly overhead. Yellow streams of light crept into the hut. Each brother held up his spool of thread. The beautiful colors sparkled in the sunlight, but there were no nuggets of gold in these spools. I'm afraid not, my brother, said the sixth son, but that was a good idea. Thank you, my brother, said the oldest. Could it be, said the youngest, that by making something from this thread, we could earn a fortune in gold? Perhaps, said the oldest, we could make cloth from this thread and sell it. I believe we can do it. This is a good plan, said the middle son, but we do not have enough of any one color to make a full boat of cloth. What if, said the third son, we weave the thread together to make a cloth of many colors? But our people do not wear cloth like that, said the fifth son. We wear only cloth of one color. Maybe, said the second, we could make a cloth that is so special everyone will want to wear it. My brothers, said the sixth son, we could finish faster if we all work together. I know we can succeed, said the middle son. The seven Ashanti brothers went to work. Together they cut the wood to make a loom. The younger brothers held the pieces together while the older brothers assembled the loom. They took turns weaving cloth out of their spools of thread. They made a pattern of stripes and shapes that looked like the wings of birds. They used all the colors, red, blue, yellow, orange, green, black, and white. Soon, the brothers had several pieces of beautiful multicolored cloth. When the cloth was finished, the seven brothers took turns neatly folding the brightly colored fabric. Then they placed it into 7 baskets and put the baskets on their heads. The brothers formed a line from the oldest to the youngest and began the journey to the village. The sun slowly made a golden path across the sky. The brothers hurried down the long dusty road as quickly as they could. As soon as they entered the marketplace, the 7 Ashanti brothers called out, "Come and buy the most beautiful cloth in the world. Come and buy the most beautiful cloth in the world." They unfolded a boat and held it up for all to see. The multicolored fabric glistened like a rainbow. A crowd gathered around the 7 Ashanti brothers. "Oh," said one villager, "I have never seen cloth so beautiful. Look at the unusual pattern." "Ah," said another, "this is the finest fabric in all the land. Feel the texture." The brothers smiled proudly. Suddenly, a man dressed in magnificent robes pushed his way to the front of the crowd. Everyone stepped back respectfully. It was the king's treasurer. He rubbed the cloth between the palms of his hands. Then he held it up to the sunlight. "What a thing of beauty," he said, fingering the material. "This cloth will make a wonderful gift for the king. I must have all of it." The 7 brothers whispered together. "Cloth fit for a king should be purchased at a price that only a king can pay," said the oldest. "It's yours for 1 bag of gold." "Sold," said the king's treasurer. He untied his bag of gold and spilled out many pieces for the brothers. The 7 Ashanti brothers ran out of the marketplace and back down the road to their village. A shining silver moon began to creep up in the sky. Panting and dripping with sweat, the brothers threw themselves before the chief's hut. "Oh, chief," said the oldest, "we have turned the thread into gold." The chief came out of his hut and sat upon a stool. The oldest brother poured the gold out onto the ground. "Have you argued or fought today?" asked the chief. "No, my chief," said the youngest. "We've been too busy working together to argue or fight." "Then you have learned the lesson your father sought to teach you," said the chief. "All that he had is now yours." The older brothers smiled happily, but the youngest son looked sad. "What about the poor people in the village?" he asked. "We receive an inheritance, but what will they do?" "Perhaps," said the oldest, "we can teach them how to turn thread into gold." The chief smiled. "You have learned your lesson very well." The 7 Ashanti brothers taught their people carefully. The village became famous for its beautiful multicolored cloth, and the villagers prospered. From that day to this, the 7 Ashanti brothers worked together farming the land. And they have worked peacefully in honor of their father.
We'll be right back with more of A Season's Griot from PRI, Public Radio International.
A new year can be a chance for change. New plans, new goals, perhaps to fulfill new dreams. At Henry Ford Community College, we can be your partner for all of this. We have over 110 academic degrees and certificates if you're just starting out. Or if you're career building or career changing, we have classes for that too. And life enrichment for the fun of it. Our winter semester begins on Monday, January 9th, and continues through April. For your most preferred classes at the best days and times, enroll now, either online anytime at hfcc.edu or in person at our main campus, 5101 Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road in Dearborn. If you'll be a new student, you must first go in person to the HFCC admissions office. Do that before December 23rd or after January 1st. Have a great 2012 and consider making HFCC part of your plans. Full information at www.hfcc.edu.
Welcome back to A Season's Griot on PRI Public Radio International. I'm Madafo. This year, we are telling stories about peace.
Peace is, it's a feeling of security, but something that's unseen. It's almost something where I'm not sensing any danger. I'm not feeling emotionally invested in trying to maintain a certain lifestyle. I feel like peace is when I'm at peace is when I'm feeling my warmest, my most content.
You touch one person, and maybe they'll touch the next person, and maybe they'll touch the next person. I tell you what, I was in food line, this very food line, and the lady in front of me didn't have enough money to pay for her food. So I gave her, you know, the money that whatever she needed. It was only like a dollar and some change, but I gave it to her. But then when my food got rung up, I didn't have enough. And the lady behind me had to give it to me. And I was like, oh my goodness. And the lady behind me, she was an older woman, and she said, you see what happens because you helped her. And I saw you help her. That's why I wanted to help you. I said, thank you.
Peace to me is just like the essence of living in tranquility, like the if it's like the awesomest, comfortablest, most coolest point in existence.
Knowing Peace by Beverly Fields Burnett. How can you know what peace is if you can't compare distress or know the depth of canyons if hills have no measured test? How can you know the height of pain if you haven't seen the joy of smiles or know the mastery of hills if you can't calculate the miles?
The sacred story of the tree of life, the self-created. No stars were there. No sun, neither moon nor earth. Nothing existed but darkness itself. A darkness everywhere. Nothing existed but nothingness. A nothingness neither hot nor cold. Dead nor alive, a nothingness far worse than nothing and frightening in its utter nothingness. For how long this nothingness lasted, no one will ever know. And why there was nothing but nothing is something we must never try to learn. Nothingness had been floating for no one knows how long upon the invisible waters of time, that mighty river with neither source nor mouth, which was which is and ever shall be. Then one day, or is it right to say one day, the river Time desired nothingness, like a flesh and blood male beast desires his female partner. And as a result of this strangest mating of time and nothingness, a most tiny, nigh invisible spark of living fire was born. This tiny, so tiny spark of fire could think and grew conscious of its lonely state. No one nor nothing could hear its cries in the lonely depths of utter nothingness. Like forlorn, a babe lost and in despair in a cold, dark forest. I exist. I am what I am, was the living thought that pulsed through the mind of the tiny spark as it wildly flew through the dark, trying to flee from where there was no escape, trying to evade the lifeless, empty, dark, and utter nothingness. It was like a tiny firefly lost in a dark cave neath a berg from where it could never escape. I must either grow or end my life, thought the spark at long, long last. If nothingness wishes to engulf me in my present size and state, then I must increase my size till I equal that of nothingness. There was nothing for the spark to feed upon and grow. So it fed upon itself and grew in size until at last its mother, nothingness, became aware of its unwelcome presence and decided to destroy it. Nothingness at first had tried to smother it in darkness, which is the enemy of light. But the spark resisted brighter and became yet brighter. Then nothingness cast a spell of cold upon the spark. Cold, a deadly foe of heat. But this induced the spark to grow only hotter and yet more hot. The living spark did grow and grew until at last it equaled nothingness in size, and to sustain itself, proceed with growth, it devoured its mother, nothingness, and digested her with the most awful flash of light that anyone or anything had ever chanced to see. I am what I am, it boasted. But River Time was very cross with what the spirit had done and quickly sent the spirit cold to fight the spark outright. A mighty battle ensued in which the spark, now a universal roaring flame which filled the sky with many soaring tongues, tried to melt cold spirit and devour it complete, while cold, its icy spirit blew its cold, wet breath into the flame, but it only turned a portion of the flame into cold, white ash. And this ferocious battle, which started so long ago, today still rages unabating and shall yet proceed till time shall cease to flow. And the wise men of the tribes relate that if the flame one day shall win, all that exists shall perish in one consuming fire. While if victory goes to the spirit of cold, all living things shall freeze to death. May the great spirit, who is Lord Almighty and paramount chief of all, grant that neither flame nor cold shall ever win the war, because whosoever beats the other, the sun, the moon, the earth, and stars, and all that live, shall cease to be. May both antagonists fight forth for everlasting time, because on their unceasing conflict, all life depends.
There will be peace. Everyone will be the same. It will just be harmony. No conflicts, no wars, no arguments, no strife, no poverty, no evilness, no ugliness in the world. It will be beautiful and peaceful.
And that was possible to have peace throughout the whole world would be that we all would be as one, valuing each other's differences, but also be able to communicate, be able to live together, and to accept each other, acceptance of each other's different cultures or ways of being.
Everywhere you go to, it's going to be flower. Every corners, you know, every streets, every highway. And you see ladies with the flower, just giving flower, throwing a flower. So that's the kind of peace we need. We all need to come together and then make the world peace.
Gullah Animal Tales. Brother Alligator sees trouble. Brother Alligator lived in the water where there was enough fish to eat and they didn't have to work for a living, and he never met with trouble. Brother Robert lived on the land and he met with plenty of trouble. One time, Brother Rabbit was rambling along the creek near Brother Alligator's house. Brother Rabbit met Brother Alligator sitting on the porch, and he said, "Good morning, Brother Alligator. How are you and yours?" Brother Alligator told him that he was getting along very well, and he asked Brother Rabbit how everyone was at his house. Brother Rabbit told them they were all making out, but said, "There is too much trouble, Brother Alligator, too much trouble." Brother Alligator asked Brother Rabbit what trouble was and what it looked like. Brother Rabbit said to Brother Alligator, "You've never seen trouble? I can show you trouble." Brother Alligator told Brother Rabbit that he would like to see what trouble looked like. Brother Rabbit told him that if he would meet him in the broom sage field the next morning before the sun dried the dew off the grass, he would show him trouble. The next morning, as the sun was getting hot, Brother Alligator picked up his hat and started to leave the house. When Sister Alligator saw him going, she asked him where was he going. He told Sister Alligator that he was going to meet Brother Rabbit because he was going to show him what trouble looked like. Sister Alligator quarreled with Brother Alligator and told him if he was going, she was going too. All the little alligators heard them quarreling and they all shouted, "If you are going, we are going too. If you're going, we are going too." They all made such a racket that Brother Alligator got tired of listening to them. He told them all to shut their mouths and come along. They all went across the marsh. By the time they got to the broom sage field to meet Brother Rabbit, he was sitting on top of a stump waiting for them. They all told Brother Rabbit good morning, and the little alligators curtsied. After Brother Rabbit told them all good morning, he asked Brother Alligator, "You all come to see trouble this morning, have you?" Brother Alligator told him, "Yes." When he was leaving the house this morning, they all begged to come along. They all made such a racket that to save his ears, he had to let them come too. Brother Rabbit told them to stand in the middle of the field, then told them to wait there and he would get trouble and bring it to them. Brother Rabbit went to the edge of the field, cut out a handful of broom sage, and set it on fire. Then he ran around and around so the fire caught round and around in the field. Directly, Sister Alligator saw the fire jumping up red and the smoke going up, and she said, "Brother Alligator, what is that over there?" They all lived in the river and the marsh and had never seen fire. Brother Alligator told her that he didn't know what it was. Sister Alligator said, "I think that is the trouble Brother Rabbit brought to show us." All the little alligators jumped up and down shouting, "Aren't trouble pretty, Mama? Aren't trouble pretty?" Soon, The fire's heat closed in, and the smoke got bad, so they all went to one side of the field. There they met the fire. They turned around and went to the other side. There they met the fire. The fire's heat got so close, they felt like it was going to burn them. They all shut their eyes, lowered their heads close to the ground, and rushed through the fire and never stopped until Brother Alligator went, "Plashow!" into the creek. Right behind him, Sister Alligator went, "Splashow!" into the creek. All the little alligators came, "Shh-shh-shh!" into the creek. As they were coming out of the field, Brother Rabbit was sitting on top of the stump, and he shouted, "You seen trouble now, Brother Alligator. You seen trouble." The fire didn't get to the alligator's belly parts, which was next to the ground and is still white, but all their backs burned until they were black and rigid, just like you see them look today.
The Parable of the Eagle, an African-American folk tale. Many years ago, there lived a chicken farmer who became rich, selling beautiful leghorn chickens. But there came a time when a dreaded chicken disease attacked his farm, and the farmer lost all his riches, trying to save his beautiful leghorns. One day, as the farmer sat studying how he would regain his riches, a strange old man came to the farm and said, "Chicken farmer, I know how you can regain your riches. If you go to the mountain and steal the eggs from the eagle's nest, raise the eaglets, then many people will come and pay handsomely to see these beautiful birds in captivity." So the chicken farmer went to the mountain, and sure enough, there were two eggs in the nest. The farmer brought the eggs to his farm and placed them under one of his finest setting hens. And then one day, an egg hatched, and a beautiful eaglet emerged from its shells. It had long, sharp talons. Its chest was like that of a barrel. Its wingspan was twice that of any bird, and it could see for hundreds of miles. But the little eaglet thought it was a chicken. Each day, the eaglet would peck and scratch around the barnyard, just like the scraggly old leghorn chickens. In fact, this bird became a better peck and scratcher than the chickens, and the farmer became rich again. But one day, the second egg hatched, and a beautiful little eaglet emerged from the shells. It had long, strong talons. Its wingspan was twice that of any bird. It stood tall and could see for hundreds of miles. And it was plain to see this bird was different. This bird would not follow behind the chickens. Instead, it would gaze into the sky while the other birds pecked and scratched. One day, the first eaglet asked his brother, "Why won't you peck and scratch like the rest of us chickens?" And the second eaglet said, "For some reason, I feel like I'm supposed to be up there in the sky." But the older bird said, "Oh, you know chickens don't fly that high." And he continued to follow the chickens, pecking and scratching around the barnyard. One day, an eagle came from nowhere and landed on a limb that overhung the barnyard. He said to the younger eaglet, "Hey, little one, why are you down there with those chickens?" The little eaglet said,
"Because I am a chicken."
The adult eagle laughed so hard he almost fell off the limb. When he saw the eaglet was serious, he said, "You're no chicken. You are an eagle. You are the king and queen of all the birds. You can fly to the sun. You are an eagle." The eaglet was so excited, he ran to his brother and said,
"My brother, this bird says that we are not chickens. We're eagles. We can fly."
But the brother eaglet said, "I'm not an eagle. I'm a chicken. And if you know what's good for you, you would peck and scratch like the rest of us chickens." The adult eagle went to the eaglet and said, "Come, little one. I will tell you your history. I will teach you to fly. Then the littlest eagle learned its history and stood proud. The adult bird said, "Now, flap your wings, little one." And he did. And before he knew it, the eaglet flew to the highest branch on the tree and screeched, "I can fly! I am an eagle!" There's more to come on A Season's Creole from PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to A Season's Griot on PRI Public Radio. Welcome back to A Season's Griot on PRI Public Radio International. I'm Madafo. This year, we are telling stories about peace.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Sister, talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister, oh, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on, yeah, what's going on.
To me, peace is, first, I would like to say knowing right from wrong and doing the right thing. Second, it is definitely being kind to your next man and treating him as you would want to be treated.
Peace is being quiet, easygoing, non-controversial. I don't know whether that's possible or not, but it would be a wonderful world if we could have that peace.
And that was possible, have peace throughout the whole world, would be that we all would be as one, valuing each other's differences, but also be able to communicate, be able to live together, and to accept each other, acceptance of each other's different cultures or ways of being.
When you find the answer to bring world peace, please let everybody know.
The Cat Who Came Indoors, a Zimbabwe folk tale. Once upon a time, there was a cat, a wild cat, who lived all by herself out in the bush. After a while, she got tired of living alone and took herself a husband, another wild cat who she thought was the finest creature in all the jungle. One day, as they strolled along together along the path through the tall grass, out of the grass jumped Leopard. The cat's husband was bowled over, all fur and claws, into the dust. Oh, said Cat, I see my husband is covered in dust and is not the finest creature in all the jungle. It is Leopard. So Cat went to live with Leopard. They lived together very happily until one day, as they were hunting in the bush, suddenly out of the shadows leapt Lion right onto Leopard's back and ate him all up. Oh, said Cat, I see Leopard is not the finest creature in all the jungle. It is Lion. So Cat went to live with Lion. They lived happily, very happily, until one day, as they were stalking through the forest, a large shape loomed overhead. An elephant put one foot on top of Lion and squashed him flat. Oh, said Cat, I see Lion is not the finest creature in all the jungle. It is Elephant. So Cat went to live with Elephant. She climbed up on his back and sat purring on his neck right between his two ears. They lived together very happily until one day, as they were moving through the tall reeds down by the river, kapow, there was a loud bang. An elephant sank down into the ground. Cat looked around and all she could see was a small man with a gun. Oh, said Cat, I see Elephant is not the finest creature in all the jungle. It is Man. So Cat walked after Man all the way to his home and jumped up into the thatch of his hut. At last, said Cat, I have found the finest creature in all the jungle. She lived up on that thatch of the hut very happily and began to catch mice and rats that lived into the village. Until one day, as she sat on the roof, warming herself in the sun, she heard a noise from inside the hut. The voices of Man and his wife grew louder and louder, until suddenly out came Man, tumbling head over heels into the dust. Aha, said Cat, now I do know who is truly the finest creature in all the jungle. It is Woman. And she came down from the thatch, went inside the hut, and sat by the fire. And that is where she's been ever since.
Another traditional African-American folktale, Getting Common Sense. Once upon a time, Anansi thought to himself that if he could collect all the common sense in the world and keep it for himself, then he was bound to get plenty of money and plenty of power, for everybody would have to come to him with their worries, and he would charge them a whole lot when he advised them. Anansi started to collect up all the common sense he could find and put it all into one huge calabash. When he searched and searched and couldn't find any more common sense, Anansi decided to hide his calabash on the top of a very tall tree so that nobody else could reach it. So Anansi tied a rope around the neck of the calabash and tied the two ends of the rope together and hung the rope around his neck so that the calabash was on his belly. He started up the tall tree, but he couldn't climb very well or very fast because the calabash kept getting in his way. He was trying and trying so hard when all of a sudden he heard a voice burst out laughing in back of him. And when he looked, he saw a little boy standing on the tree's root. What a foolish man! If you want to climb the tree front ways, why don't you put the calabash behind you? Well, Anansi was so angry to hear that big piece of common sense coming out of the mouth of such a little boy, after he had thought he had collected all the common sense in the world, that Anansi took off the calabash, broke it into pieces, and the common sense scattered out in the breeze all over the world. Everybody got a little bit of it, but no one got it all. It was Anansi who made it happen that way.
I think the word peace means like calm, relaxing world where no one's fighting and everyone gets along.
Peace is living happily.
The Voice of the Storyteller by Evita Hofstadter. In another time, in a busy, busy city, people were working, bustling, hurrying about. Time was precious. No one noticed the woman at the entrance of the park. She sat there on a rock and appeared to be waiting. Every now and then, children would gather and sit at her feet to listen. She had the most wonderful stories to tell of faraway places and of the slow old times. They loved her voice and the pictures she could paint with it. One day, parents asked the children where they had been and what they were doing. "We were in the park, listening to the colorful lady tell stories," they explained. "Huh, there's no need for that. We have plenty of books in our home, at your school, and certainly at the local library. And the television shows can provide all the stories you need. There will be no more visits to this lady in the park." Each day, the storyteller could be seen waiting at the entrance of the park. The woman waited for the children a week and a day. When she learned her little friends could no longer visit, she picked up her bag and walked out of town. To where? No one knows. Shortly afterwards, a strange thing happened. All the TV sets blacked out, zing, just like that. And if that wasn't enough, soon as a page was turned, all the writing in every book was faded. The moon refused to rise, and all the stars lost their twinkle. All of the adults became seriously concerned and worried, especially when the next day the sun did not appear in the sky. The people took torches and stormed City Hall, demanding to know what was happening and for them to do something. Soon, the torches had no power, and pitch darkness covered the busy little city. Meanwhile, the children, by some strange magic, were mysteriously drawn to the entrance of the park. They gathered wood, built a barn fire, and waited. "What are you doing, children?" asked the adults. "If we are quiet, she may return," said the children. "Who may return?" inquired the adults. "Shh!" all the children sounded in unison. Then, out of the darkest darkness, into the glow of the fire, came the storyteller. She sat on a rock near the fire and began to speak. Her voice was so melodious, it filled the park like a song and lifted everyone's heart. Slowly, the light went on in the sky and in the adults' heads as the storyteller told stories about the sun, the stars, and the moon. She painted all the memories of love, peace, and happiness back with her beautiful words of wisdom and compassion. When the storyteller turned to leave, the people of the city begged her to stay. "Please stay," asked the mayor. "What we need most in these troubling times is a storyteller, someone to remind us of who we are and our responsibility to each other." Did the storyteller remain in the busy city? What do you think?
Yes, if you go, if I love you, yes, if you live, it's young.
Ancestors have passed on, transitioned to the spiritual realm. And with the wonderful stories and memories we have of their time with us, we remain connected eternally. The monuments we create in their behalf are testimonials, that honor the service they rendered to the family community.
Max Fields.
Margie Felton.
Uncle Josh.
Lila May.
Maxwell Overton Page.
Beulah May.
Flossie McIntyre.
Orban.
William McIntyre.
Aunt Maddie.
Melba Page.
Jackie Torrance.
Gerald.
Mary McIntyre.
Joshua.
Bobby.
Mrs. Rooks.
Catherine Fields.
Connie Page.
Thomas Jervie.
Karen Holdridge.
Mama Gussie.
Alice Fields.
Once a year, a time of celebration for the family. A time when we renew our commitment to community.
On behalf of everyone here at WHQR and A Season's Griot, we thank you for listening. Thanks to our wonderful storytellers Joyce Greer, Pamela Reed, and our poet-in-residence Beverly Fields Burnett, who wrote and recited her poem, Knowing Peace. The story, The Sacred Tree of Life, from Indaba, My Children, copyright 1964, by Vusama Zulu Credo Mutwa, is used with permission of the publisher, Grove Atlantic Incorporated. Seven Spools of Thread, written by Angela Shelf Medeiros and illustrated by Daniel Minter, is read with permission from Albert Whitman and Company. The Healing Force is Joseph, Gail, Sonji, and Kareem Anderson. They wrote, produced, and performed Celebrate Kwanzaa and Kwanzaa Is. A Season's Griot is written, directed, and hosted by Madafo Lloyd Wilson. Be sure your bookcase contains Madafo's book, The Greedy Hyena. Our producer is Mary Bradley. Our technical director and editor is Sarah Wood. Laura Hunsberger is the production assistant. Special thanks to George Schreibner, Jeremy Loeb, and Asia Brown for technical assistance. This program is a production of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina. More information about A Season's Griot is available at whqr.org. Support for this program comes from this station and Public Radio International stations nationwide, and is made possible in part by the PRI Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. This project was supported by the North Carolina Arts Council, a division of the Department of Cultural Resources. Thank you for listening to A Season's Griot. We look forward to presenting next year's Kwanzaa program. Until then, we wish you and your loved ones peace and blessings in your homes and hearts. Happy Kwanzaa.
WHFR, Dearborn.